So my name is Adam Metz. I'm a minister in Columbus, Ohio, just in the northern suburbs of Columbus. I just finished my doctorate degree from Fuller Seminary about 2 years ago, and my final project was on the topic of sports. And one of the reasons I chose sports was threefold. I love sports. I love theology. And as a pastor, sports is the bane of my existence. And the fourth thing was nobody was talking about it. I had so many people in my church that were spending so much of their time, whether it was watching sports or living sports if their kids were young, and yet no one was talking about it from a Christian perspective. And so I started to dabble a little bit in this topic, and it was kind of like this surge of information, and it's kind of this growing tidal of people who are starting to kind of realize this. There's so many different things to talk about, and we have 45 minutes. So I tried to give us some beginning points. And what I want to begin with is I want you to take a journey with me. On November 2nd, 2016, I was up on the upper deck in Progressive Field in Cleveland, Ohio. It was Game 7 of the World Series. It's a long story. We can talk about it later. But I actually had tickets to all the games in Cleveland this year. I've been a lifelong Cleveland Indians fan. It was the eighth inning. The Indians were down by two. There was a runner on. Rajay Davis hit a home run off of Aroldis Chapman. I had the biggest, most spiritual event in my life that I have ever had. I was going to show it. I think it's probably better I don't show it because I would not be able to continue. I'm a preacher, and I love the Lord, and I've been part of some incredible worship services like here at Pepperdine, and so I'm supposed to tell you that it was almost as good. I'm telling you, it was better. It was incredible. I can still remember, I turned around and I jumped up two rows, which I was almost at the top anyways, and you could hear all these people. Now, it was half Cubs fans, which is a different topic for another day, but there were 20,000 Indians fans, and they were all yelling at the exact same time, "Oh my God! Oh my God! Oh my God!" Over and over again, and a lot of people repented the next day because they were felt guilty about that. And if you don't like the Indians, you don't care because of our country's obsession with the Cubs. There are probably more of you who were excited a little bit later in the game because, as Indians fans, my joy in telling this story stops right then. And never nothing else happened after that. But the reality is, man, sports can take us places that there are few places in our culture that can take us. And the thing is, not everybody's a sports fan. I'm going to assume that most of us in this room probably are, because I didn't give you much else to go on other than this is a sports class. But there are few things in our culture that have the passion, especially for men. And I don't want to be sexist, but, you know, there are so many more men at sporting events. Now, I know that there's a whole other discussion about why that might be, but the reality is, especially when you compare church attendance, right? And there's a long discussion about whether or not sports is actually a religion. Just proof I was there, that's all. There's a philosopher named Michael Novak. I almost forgot to get my... If you like sports, back in the 1970s, he wrote a book called The Joy of Sports. He's a Catholic theologian. He just actually passed away a few months ago. And this is the wrong paper. When I think about what happened at the World Series, and as a Cleveland fan, I'm a Cleveland fan all around, this hasn't happened very often in my life. It's been more of devastation, death, disappointment. And so when I've had these moments, I really usher in something that Michael Novak said. This is a shorter quotation. I'm going to read it because it's so compelling. And I think if you're passionate about a sports team, you can appreciate this. It was 1973. It was my 40th year. And I'm riding on the 529 for my job in Manhattan to my home on Long Island, one of the 90 million workers weary with the Monday blues. It's early in September. My birthday is a week and a half away. The scotch is swaying restlessly in my paper cup. And suddenly I remember, Monday night, television, the Dodgers are at Montreal. My spirits lift. Tonight, there is a treat. Now, of course, this is before you could get every game on your phone. That hot September night, the Dodgers lost. I was 3 days shy of 40, and their loss depressed me. I didn't even know in advance six of the nine players on the team, young guys far away in Los Angeles, and in this busy summer of my life beyond the range of my perception. The Dodgers had been winning. They lost in the ninth. Saturday and Sunday, they'd blown an important series to Cincinnati, yada, yada, yada. And then he goes on and he says, "My wife lives in some other world at such times of private suffering." I sat there vacantly. And this is the part that I want you to think about. How could I be 40 years old and still care about what happens to the Dodgers? How could I have thrown away 3 hours, and now it's more like 4 hours, of my life watching a ritual, an inferior dance, a competition without a socially redeeming point? And so he asks, as he's approaching 40 years old, maybe this was something from my childhood, like, and it's time to grow up a little bit, which probably many wives have looked at their husband and said, there's something similar to that. Come on, this is child's game. And so this afternoon, I want us to think a little bit about sports. The stained glass there, and it's not great pictures because I couldn't find any that were in color. These are actual stained glass windows that are in the St. John Divine Episcopal Church in New York City. So the bishop's daughter at the time had gone in 1924 to the Olympics in Paris. And she came back and she had this great idea. What if we create this bay, this dedication to sports? Now this is kind of on the heels of the social gospel. And so everybody was starting to get kind of in touch with social justice and kind of the workings in gymnasiums and a lot of what we're kind of reaping the benefits of now in the industrialization of sports kind of began at this time. And it began as this kind of merger and this realization of the fact that our bodies are good, that health is good, and so it's known as the muscular Christianity, if you're familiar with that phrase. And kind of the apex was this. So you've got a basketball player, baseball player, football player. The problem is, like you might have imagined, there were some people that were a little hesitant about this. And so especially, this is the 30s, 1920s, especially horse racing, which was particularly frowned upon. Boxing, which it's hard to remember these days, but boxing used to be one of the sport in the United States. But as Christians, it's kind of like MMA today. When you're watching the blood fly, there's at least part of you that is a little uncomfortable. I don't know if we should put that in the stained glass. And so what they did was they took Jacob wrestling an angel. They took Paul's words to finish the race. And they kind of merged them. But you can go to New York City today, and it's still there. It's called the Sports Bay. It wasn't finished until, I think, the 40s or 50s. But the justification from the bishop to wrestle with some of these things, sports have just as important place in our lives as our prayers. It's my opinion that the beautiful game of polo in its place is as pleasing to God as a beautiful service in a beautiful cathedral. And that has given us this. I mean, we don't even think about it anymore. Like, it's so prevalent in our sports. Deion Sanders said, "Faith and sports go together like peanut butter and jelly." And so we're not surprised when somebody scores a touchdown and takes a knee. Of course, you've got Touchdown Jesus in South Bend, right? The big image there. It's just second nature that we would give glory to God. This is an interesting, just a little side note. It was Herb Lusk who was the first NFL player to take a knee after he scored a touchdown. It was a second touchdown, and he did it, in the way he retells the story, just kind of as an afterthought, but he just takes a knee. And to think about 1977 wasn't that long ago, but now it's just immersed in our culture. And you can make the point, and some have made the point, that Christianity has really come under attack in a lot of places in our culture. But in sports, it's still given a little more leeway than a lot of other places. Which, just wait, right? I mean, there's going to be coming a lot more interesting things. So as a way to kind of summarize some of the points, since we don't have a whole lot of time, I want us to wrestle with this. What is it that draws us to sports? Because it tends to be, when you talk about sports, you tend to either on the one hand do what we just saw, hey, it's as important as prayer, or you have kind of this Puritan baggage which looks at sports and other celebrations and all the other things that we're familiar with that they would shun, and we tend to swing at one extreme or the other. What I want us to do is wrestle a little bit with all of it. I think the first thing that draws us, and it's kind of what I described a minute ago, is there's a transcendent element to sports. I mean, I love these pictures. I'm not the biggest basketball fan. I love basketball, but man, back in the 80s, if you were a child of the 80s, I want to be like Mike, which has some spiritual connotations, which we don't have time to talk about, right? But there's identity formation issues that goes on with our identification with sports. But that transcendent moment, I mean, it takes us to a place. I mean, I got off the train in Cleveland on game 6, because remember, they were up 3-1. So game six, it was a Monday, I think it was a Monday. It was a Monday or Tuesday, I can't remember now. I tried to blur some of it from my mind. I got off the train. Well, first of all, we get to the parking lot, and the entire, you can hear the hum of the city. I mean, it was the most transcendent few hours I've ever had. The Cavs had a game that night, which they moved the start time. So you had 20,000 people, and if you've been to Cleveland, the stadiums are right next door. All these people spill out, and everybody knew that we were going to do it. I mean, it was transcendent. I mean, it took you to another place. And you can look at this from a, and there's two different sides of this coin. There's watching sports and there's playing sports. I'm trying to walk the balance between both, because this is a place in both places. And I think if you have children that play, especially the first time that they do something, you know, whatever it is, if it's figure skating, I mean, that's the thing, sports is so big, figure skating, gymnastics, the first time they land this or they do this, it's a, man, it's this transcending moment. And it's a good thing. Transcendence is good. You can look at the Psalms and see God is transcendent. Where can I go from your spirit? Where can I flee from your presence? We do a lot of things to kind of pursue transcendence. Nature, for some people, is a transcendent experience. And it's all good to have that reality of there's more to life. Like, that's really what transcendence is, right? There's more than just me. We're in Columbus, okay? 105,000 people show up. Travis, you know this. It's a spiritual journey that all Ohio people take, right? Oh, did you go? So it's a spiritual experience, and it's littered all across the country, right? The Coliseum is just down the road, and it's one of the beautiful things about sports is you go from region to region. Dion and I are going to the Dodgers game tonight because I have to teach this class. It's kind of a little field trip. You go. But everywhere, every time you go, when you're there at a stadium, you're caught up in something, and it's bigger than all of us, which is what's great about it. Now, we're going to get to what can be bad about it in a minute, because we have to. We don't necessarily want to. Then we talk about the community aspect. These are the things that when we're parents of little kids, this is why we sign sport kids up for sports. Oh, they're going to learn teamwork. They're going to learn how to win and how to lose, how to interact. They're going to learn. Right now, my daughter's softball team is practicing 3 hours. Yeah, I think they're practicing right now. And so it's given me a chance to hang out with the girls on the team, and we look at our coaches as kind of mentors. And there's so many different elements of community. This is on the playing side, teamwork, all those things. And how many of you play sports, by the way? Right? Almost everybody. And if you haven't played it, like on a team, in your physical education classes, in the backyard growing up, down at the park, like what would a park look like with no basketball hoops, no tennis courts? I mean, it's such a part of our lives. But then you have the community of watching sporting events. I mean, Columbus is insane about Ohio State and its football team. And we've had people move from out of town. Well, Dion's not. You're not a Buckeyes fan. He lives in Columbus with me. And nobody likes him. We don't like you. You have trouble fitting into a community. Like, if any of you are ministers, when you move out of town and you go somewhere else, like, you have to wrestle with this. Okay, do I be an Angels fan now that I'm in L.A.? Or can I hold on to my, like, how do I immerse myself in that context? Because part of it is, you know, we talk about Buckeye Nation, you know, Trojan Nation. We talk about all these, because it's a community, and it's a good thing. Like, the Buckeyes draw Columbus together more than anything else, by far, which has its challenges, but it's a good thing. Sometimes I wonder, what would our communities be without our teams? It's one of the reasons that when a city, there's that concept of being a major league city, which means you have a professional sports franchise, and there's kind of a prestige attached to it, but there's also a social culpability with it as well. Just like, by the way, universities, right? I wish we had more time to talk about how universities are just wrestling with, you know, our structure of sports in the United States is way different than anywhere else. Like in Europe, it's pretty much club and kind of separated from the educational process. Again,
you have a pretty good pro team at Ohio State.
Haters.
I'm from Nebraska.
The Big Ten haters out there. There's so much to the whole discussion of college sports. Thanks for bringing that up because it makes me feel icky. Like doing, and actually, to be honest, doing this process, it's kind of disillusioning for a lot of college sports, especially, but even youth, and that's kind of what we're. My real focus is youth. We just didn't have time to really talk about that. it's good when people are together, right? I mean, these are all biblical terms. That's I'm just kind of cherry-picking verses, but these are all theological concepts that you're familiar with. One that maybe is a little bit more foreign, and I had to work with this one, maybe even should have started with this one, is God made us to play. There's a sociologist back in the 30s, I think, named Johann Huizinga, or something like that. It's H-U-I-N-G-Z-A, something another. And he wrote a book called Homo Ludens. And you're all familiar with Homo sapiens. Well, Homo Ludens is being created to play. And he has this great book. It's about 150 pages about how God has intended his people to play. When you look at your children, I mean, how many times do you tell your kids, go play? Like, you expect them to, that's what we expect. If you have a kid sitting around who's not playing, you look at him like, what's wrong with this kid, you know? God has created us for play. I did a little bit of theological work on this, because have you ever done a theology of play? If you're super nerdy, it's exciting. The rest of you are going, why would you do this? But, you know, some kind of biblical or theological rationale for play. It's such a big part of our lives. And I think you can make the point that it falls somewhere between rest and work. I mean, it's not fully, I mean, you can't go out and play a soccer game and say you rested. However, at the same time, there's something therapeutic and physiological that happens when we exert ourselves. We realize that, right? Exercise is healthy. I mean, as sedentary as our jobs have become and as inside as we've kind of become, we realize we need to be outside. We need to play, that there's something restful, and that's the rest side of it. So I think that maybe play is best connected to Sabbath, that there's a restful element to play. Which will come in then, when we get to it in a minute, how restful are the sports our kids play nowadays? Because if you're like me, my kids are 8, 10, and 12. My wife is a saint. She is right now dealing with softball practice, baseball practice, and a soccer game. And if you talk to any parents that have kids my age, they're not going to tell you sports is very restful. It's oppressive, right? We'll talk more about that in a little bit, but God has created us to play. You all know the Sabbath teachings well. ESPN, the magazine, had this interesting idea a few years ago called The Body, what you didn't expect to see on a slide in Friday Night Lecture this year. But one of the things that draws us to sports is, I don't know about you, but these are bodies of athletes, and they look different than my body. I mean, this is Gronkowski. If I took my shirt off, I don't want to embarrass anybody. It's close to that. But we watch sports because we're enamored with the physicality that's on display before us. And I think, again, our lives have become so sedentary that is it any wonder that we live kind of vicariously through those who actually have physical exertion? Well, not long ago, when everybody who had a job was involved in some kind of physical labor. I think sports draws out the incarnational aspect. It's one area where we look at our bodies and we say, bodies are good. Like, I like to watch LeBron James play because physically he's just incredible. And it's a spectacle. There's a transcendent element. But then it also at least gives me a little bit of, what would I be if I worked out regularly? Right? What would I be if I realize that this is in all of us, that we have the capacity. It's an overcoming of the old Platonic dualism where we looked at body and said, well, the body's evil. All that matters is a spiritual aspect. Sports helps us appreciate the fact that, no, our bodies matter. Like, physically, it's a good thing. You know, gymnasiums are good. Workout facilities are good. Fitness is good. These bodies are good. It draws us to sports. And then there's this sticky issue of competition. Now, I want to just throw this out there. Have you ever considered a biblical case for competition? I mean, it's just presumed to be good in our culture. I mean, it is everything to Americans, right? It's how we test. It's how we, you know, if you're going to determine who the best student is, what are you going to do? You're going to compete. If you're going to determine who the best business person is, you're going to compete. It's the essence of our business economy. Good businesses are going to survive. I mean, it's the great mediator. So, of course, sports or competition is good, but when you actually try to get biblical about it, it becomes a little bit of a challenge. And we don't have time to, we could do a whole class on competition, we could do a series on competition, right? It's a really sticky issue. But I think we can all agree, at least, that there are elements, we'll just be safe, there are elements of competition that are good, that are positive. Think about a race. I always use this example. In the Olympics, you have your early races. What are those called? The preliminaries, right? And so you have these really fast runners, the world-class sprinters, say, that are going to make the next gold medal round. What always happens is they come around to the last stretch in the qualifiers. They all let up, right? They all let up, especially the ones that are really far ahead and they're playing country, running against countries that aren't going to make it, that don't have serious contenders. Well, I think we can all agree that I think that the runners who are never tested probably will never have their best time, or swimmers, or anything like that. I think that's the easiest place to see when it's one-on-one. If you're running and you know there's somebody right there, it forces you to go better, go faster. The root for competition is the idea of striving together, which is kind of ironic because you think of competition as being competing against each other, but really the origin of the word is about striving together. And when we're competing in a positive, healthy way, we're striving together. We're hoping to bring the best out of each other. That's why when a sports team is getting pounded, you don't really want them to bring out the third team string, right? Because you have this feeling of, oh man, it just further eliminates. You want them to give you your best. Now, on the other hand, you don't want to throttle them, so you have to kind of live in that balance. But we want to be pushed. We want to be challenged. We want to know that our best is better than their best. So these are all things that draw us to sports. So iron sharpens iron. See, there's biblical things for all this. But we have to wrestle with this reality, that the things that draw us to sports can very easily turn and become an end in of themselves. And so I always think of Psalm 19. I don't remember if I put any passage on here or not. Psalm 19 just kind of talks about the beauty of creation. And of course we know our discussion relating to nature and the beauty and transcendence is very similar, I think, to sports. That it's a good, wonderful thing. The Psalms celebrate it. But then you have this verse in Romans. It talks about God gave them over to their sinful desires and their hearts, to their sexual impurity, for degrading of their bodies with one another. But this is the part in verse 25. They exchanged the truth about God for a lie, and they worshipped and served created things rather than the Creator. They took something that was created good, that was wonderful, that was beautiful, and they began to see that as God. And I think that metaphor is what's happening in our culture with sports. I believe everything I just told you is a wonderful, good thing. And I think that's how we have to begin to engage in sports. Because if you begin to question sports in the beginning, then people think, oh, you just don't get it. You're like Michael Novak's wife who just lives in another world, right? You just don't understand it. So important to us. No, we do understand. I do understand it. I came into this topic wanting to argue the fact that sports is a wonderful, beautiful thing. Because otherwise, I had a lot of repenting to do. I only have a little bit, I think. I want to talk a little bit about how it's intended to bring people together when it's good, what draws us together, things like teamwork, things like working together with coaches, camaraderie, all the things that can happen in sports, all of a sudden can lead to rivalries where things are kind of broken down. And again, this is more of a spectator side. But then, and we don't have time to even begin to talk about the world of travel sports and elite sports. I am writing all of this and delivering all of this as a parent who's wrestling with it too. And I'm looking at a lot of you who are probably in the same age as me. You know, sports, local neighborhood sports, were really intended to bring communities together. And a lot of times, churches were involved. In a lot of your communities, it may still be that way. What's happening? Columbus is, that's the world I live in. My son plays on a baseball team he's 12 years old. 12 kids on the team. He doesn't go to school with any of them. Most of them they all live outside of our neighborhood. Which, there aren't very many kids in the neighborhood that play baseball, so that's kind of another discussion. But this is indicative of soccer, especially soccer. It's indicative of almost every travel, elite, or club sports. When I was a kid growing up, I'd go down to Riverside Park in Defiance, Ohio, where I grew up, and there was about 7 or 8 soccer games going on, probably like most of your communities. And it was pretty much everybody from the neighborhood. It was everybody from the community. Now what happens is you got a team of 10 or 12 that pack into a van, or their parents take them, and they drive all the way across town to practice. They go all the way down an hour or two away for a close-by tournament. Or they may even get in a plane. And so even though the idea that we have that sports brings communities together, they can actually begin to fracture communities. And I think that's what's happening in a really big way. There's a national think tank called the Aspen Institute. They're involved in a lot of public policy making. They developed a directive or an initiative called Project Play a few years ago. And it's basically, its premise is that youth sports in the United States is broken. I mean, it's a blanket state. If you get time and can go on their website, check it out. It's amazing. And here's what I was doing. I was reading through all of this stuff as I've been looking at this the last couple years, and I was like, where is the church in all of this? They're dealing with a lot of the things that we're about to talk about. And what I've not seen is a lot of response from the church, because I think we are all on board with sports. And we're so close. It's like that picture that Dude showed of the bus this morning. That was hilarious. But I think that we get so close that we're not able to step back and look. And so this is just one instance. What about Sabbath? Right? This looks like my cell phone's calendar over the next couple of weeks. We're created for Sabbath. Sports is a Sabbath. It's intended to be a Sabbath, and yet it becomes oppressive to people's schedules. And if you're in ministry, man, this is the biggest obstacle we wrestle with. This is really what began to lead me down this pathway, because I was, I had parents that were involved in our church who played baseball, and they would come to us in March and say, we'll see you guys in the fall. And I didn't know how to respond to that. Because I think our instinct has always been, well, what about Sundays and Wednesdays? You know, you got to be there. I'm not that guy, because those people on the field need Jesus, and they need disciples to be in and among them. And so it's not about just skipping out on practice because you got to be at church. There seems to be something upside down about that. But at the same time, parents that are gone weekend after weekend after weekend after weekend to go to tournament after tournament after tournament, that seems to let the pendulum swing too far the other way. And so I like the language of rhythm. There's a rhythm to life. There was a rhythm to Sabbath. You remember this, right? 6 days you work, 1 day you rest. 6 days you work, 1 day you rest. But it wasn't only weekly, there was also the bigger rhythm, right? There were feasts and festivals. There was times to just take a break. Sports has become such a time, there is no break. I mean, why would you take a break when they may be practicing, your rivals downtown might be practicing, or the kid that you barely beat out to be on the travel team, he might be at the batting cage today, and so you better get there. And all that's happening is we've lost any concept of Sabbath. I mean, Sabbath, when you think about it, it's meant to be a leisure activity. It's supposed to be what we do in our free time. And now I think most of us are like, whew, I'm back to work today because I get a break. We have somebody that works at our church. It's one of our preschool teachers, and she'll often take off Monday because they were gone all week with their travel volleyball team. And so they're gone. And I'm not picking on them. I mean, that's just become so much of what we do in our culture. Go ahead.
Do you want comments?
Yeah. Well, I'm hoping we'll run through, but yeah, go ahead. We get through them.
One of the things I've noticed, I've got two teenage sons, that, you know, generally you think of baseball season as a season and basketball season, but what I've noticed is now baseball is all year.
Yeah.
It's not just during baseball season. You need to do the off-season. Even 12-year-olds are
supposed
to do the off-season workouts.
Oh, yeah. By 12, you're kind of locked in.
Is all year.
You have to pick by the time you're 9 or 10.
As opposed to, like, the rhythm of, well, in the fall you do this, in the spring you do this, and we'll see you, you know, next year for baseball. No, we're not going to see you next year for baseball. We'll see you next week for baseball. Like, it keeps going.
Well,
the ironic thing about all of this is that football probably is not as bad as all the other sports, just because you can't beat the crap out of each other. It's just like football, like the NFL. You can't play on Thursday and then turn around and play. So they have a little bit of built-in reliance, but
they have to work out.
But they're working out all the time.
Well, they get them to play rugby. My son plays rugby. Play. It's opposite season, so we just make them play rugby.
Yeah. There you go.
So
there you
really
go.
Got a break.
But that very discussion is what a lot of sociologists, a lot of community leaders, and again, I'm like, well, where's the church? Like, we should have been on the front end going, wow, this is just a game.
Well, the AAU came in.
Oh, man. I don't want to talk about AAU. Yeah. There's a documentary on Netflix. I don't know specifically about AAU. Actually, and I would give this recommendation. There's a book by a guy named George Dorman, D-O-H-R-M-A-N, maybe two N's. Let Them Play, I think, is the name of it. No, Play Their Hearts Out. Sorry. It's something like that. But anyways, it's kind of long, but it's a fascinating story of grassroots basketball in Southern California. And he follows a group of kids from the time they're like 11, 12 years old, and follows them all the way through college. It will make you weep and help you realize what's happening in our country that nobody's really talking about. Dion and I were talking, he's black, in case you didn't notice, I'm white. We were talking on the way on the plane here about how black athletes in black communities have just become future athletes preyed upon by AAU teams, by high school football teams, by, you just name the sport. And for the black community, it's become like their identity in our communities. And a lot of it's driven by this elite culture. And it's really kind of underlying all that we're talking about. You know, you talked about the seasons. It's about seasons. It's about, it's really meritocratic. This is the one thing that's kind of under my skin right now, just because we're in the midst of baseball season. My son's 12. He turned 12 in January, so he's like 12 and a half. He was on a U-12 team, so everybody's got to be 12, maybe approaching 13. He's the biggest kid in his class. And he played a game. Every baseball game he's played on, half of the kids that he's played against have been bigger than him. That's the system that we have. It rewards kids who bloom early, because he has friends at school who've kind of gone through puberty already. He hasn't yet. And we kind of reward them. Now, they may peak at 14. Of course, everybody knows the story of Michael Jordan and some of these guys who bloom later in life. The system that we have doesn't reward them. I heard a story about a girl in our neighborhood who wanted to play soccer. She liked soccer because it's fun. She didn't play in the travel leagues like all her friends did. And so her mom was like, why don't you play? We have a rec league. It's $100. We haven't even talked about money yet, right? It's only $100 to play in the rec league. She said, Mom, all the kids make fun of me. All my friends make fun of me because it's just rec league. It's become a status symbol. Like keeping up with the Joneses used to be your house and your car. Now it's what league your kid plays in. And you could just go down a list. It's happening in every single sport. And so Columbus, just this year, Bo Jackson just opened one of his big indoor facilities. Has an indoor football field, an indoor baseball infield, an indoor infield for softball, so that, just like she said, so we can play all year round. Because in Ohio, you can't play baseball in December. I don't know if you know. You can't even really play in March, which is a problem. So we haven't even mentioned this. We talk about the physical nature of our bodies. You remember, we didn't even mention this in the Olympics back in the day. They used to, I told my daughter that the other day. I said, in the Olympics, I used to compete nude. Did you know that? I should have taken a picture of her face. She was just trying to process like all of it. Like, what? Physicality is a beautiful, wonderful thing. But what's happening is our kids are playing all the year round, and they're having overuse injuries to their arms, pitchers in baseball. One of the girls at our church is a figure skater. She showed us her heels the other day. She has bone callus on her heels. And on you could go with examples of the things that happen. And I'm not saying blanketly, oh, well, that just makes it wrong, but we should ask ourselves, as people who follow Jesus, as people who worship Yahweh, who's given us our bodies to glorify God, it's not normal for kids to be going to the doctor for arm problems because they play baseball. Or football. And we didn't even talk about head injuries.
Tommy John surgery at 11 years
old. Yeah,
yeah.
If you guys haven't seen John Smoltz's introduction speech to the Baseball Hall of Fame, I think last summer, or summer before last, it's incredible. He's like, this is not normal.
11 years old, 12 years old. It's crazy.
And it's just become what you do. And this is where, as Christians, as disciples, we got to start to filter into our communities. And my wife and I are dealing with this right now. And as a preacher, it's even more. They're, I think, a little more generous. Our coach did call us before the season, before we scheduled games, and said, can we play on Sundays? I said, once in a while, maybe in the afternoon, we'll see. We still ended up playing a doubleheader last Sunday and started at 10 o'clock. Against, and this is ironic, and this is recorded, but I don't think anybody will listen to it. on there, the team's name was the Rapture.
Okay.
And they came out to all their kids, and I wasn't there because I was preaching. My wife said they came out to all the kids, all the boys before the game, and they said, now we're playing for the Lord today, on and on and on. And she's like, why are you playing on Sunday? But that's that's the world. And if your kids play sports, you realize right away this is a decision you're confronted with. Because there's not much you can do to get around that. Except play rugby on Saturdays.
Don't play on Sundays. It's always Saturdays.
What has to start happening is Christians have got to start being involved in the administration of these leagues and tournaments and start to raise some of these very things that we're talking about. Start to ask these questions. Like I said, there's a lot of people that are doing it. And there's just not a lot of vocal Christians. I don't have time to get into this. It's a whole other discussion. Christians have been really involved in sports through parachurch ministries. The YMCA, Upward, Athletes in Action, Fellowship of Christian Athletes. I'll give you my two-minute plug for what I think happened. Most of those were formed around the time the Billy Graham Crusades were happening. And so what happened was, hey, sports draws a crowd. We all know that. Well, let's set up a system to use sports to share the gospel with people. It's a great idea. However, they never really dealt with the fact that sports may, at some point, do point us in some directions that are not good. But they, for the most part, never addressed that. It was always just the platform, just the platform. There's a reason why you see Christians taking a knee in Tim Tebow and people like that. There's a reason. It's been a very intentional effort from the church and through parachurch. It's not all bad. But I think what's happened for the local church, and as Church of Christ folks, those of you Church of Christ folks, we're good, autonomous local church people, and this is where my heart is. Local church pretty much says, oh, you go to an FCA meeting on Tuesday nights or Tuesday mornings? Super. Done. And then we don't really ever talk about it anymore. Unless you're like one of these big mega churches that run sports leagues and all that kind of stuff. That's kind of another discussion for another day. Real quickly, I want to tell you the story of these two guys. I'm assuming most of you have heard of them. We're in L.A., so everybody knows Sandy Koufax, I assume.
Absolutely.
And we know the story of Sandy Koufax. World Series, what year was that? 1950, I didn't write it down.
67.
Wouldn't pitch on Yom Kippur.
Right.
They're playing the Game 1 of the World Series, and it was Yom Kippur. They're playing the Twins. I think it was in Minnesota, and he wouldn't pitch because it violated. Just think about that. Like, we can't get people to skip practice on a Sunday morning to go to church. Game 1 of the World Series, and he refused to pitch. What's interesting is he went on to pitch three games. He won them all. He was a winning pitcher of Game 7. But this is what everybody remembers. And, of course, for the Jewish community, you put the dates in your mind. They're reeling from World War II. All of a sudden, he becomes the American hero for their identity. And we flip this totally on its side. Cy Young, another pitcher before Koufax, was a Christian. A lesser-known story about Cy Young is he had it in his contract that he wouldn't pitch on Sundays. I just ran across this little tidbit a couple weeks ago. Hopefully I put the words in here because I don't remember exactly all the details of the story. But he never pitched on Sunday. They were in a this is the Spiders, okay? It's 1895, long time ago.
Are you a fan?
The Spiders?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, for sure. Got my Spiders jersey to wear later on. So he had this in his contract, but they're in a contentious pennant race down the stretch in September, and they've got a doubleheader scheduled. He goes to his manager and he says, look, I know this is going to tax our pitching staff, so if you want me to pitch, I'll pitch. Sure enough, the bullpen's getting blown up. They bring him in to pitch. He gets the win. Okay. So later on, this is where I think I wrote all this down. So this is what he used to say. The Bible stated that rescuing your neighbor's ass from the pit on the Sabbath is not a sin. Well, boys, and I can barely imagine a smile, I'll be darned if I know any bigger ass than his manager. And he was certainly in an awful hole, so I helped him out. That's like the best anecdote I've ever seen. But isn't it a great illustration to kind of compare, like, are we more Sandy Koufax pillar of faith people, or is this more kind of where our folks are, like, yeah, I mean, my team needs them. I could just go through the list of all the things that I hear from parents all the time. And it's incredibly hard. Because as we start to wrestle with what could happen, what might happen, well, my kid may not get to play high school ball because you got to play in the system. And I was reading a book, I can't remember the name of it, so I'm not going to say it. I'll just steal her idea. But she said, so what? Like, that's really hard to hear. like really hard to hear. I want what's best for my kids. And you'll hear this from a lot of parents. If they want to be a doctor, I'm going to do everything I can for them to be a doctor. There's millions of doctors in our country. There's thousands of professional athletes. I don't remember if there's anything else to talk about. Yeah, let's talk. So I could talk about, oh, I'm sorry, you want that back up? Yeah, you need that. That's good stuff. You definitely need that.
You got it.
I got it.
You got it? I love that quote. So there's so many different things to talk about. We've got 5 minutes or so. What are some of the things that strike you?
Explain to you by so what? I mean, because that's sort of how I approach sports.
Oh, about not playing?
Yeah.
That's the question you've got to wrestle with parents. I mean, what we're talking about, and this is the reason why there's so much to this discussion, because what we're really talking about is discipleship. I mean, that's what we're talking about. Like, I mean, you read the message. Rob Bell, at the end of one of his books, talks about how, you know, you suburban Christian, you know, goes into this garage, they go to church, they come back, you know, and then you read these radical passages about following Jesus, and they're like that's it? Like, that's, and I think the sports is the same way. Like we talk about denying ourselves, picking up our cross, and following him, but then we live a completely different lives by the ways that we allow our kids' sports schedules to... Yeah. And no one sets out to do it. I mean, I believe that. And this is where I think there's so much work to do for pastors, because I don't think any parent sets out to do this. I think every parent is like me, probably. Just let that sink in. Every parent's probably like me. Every parent's probably like me in that you hear these outrageous prices that people pay for their kids to play in travel leagues, and you just think, I would never do that. But then, as they get to be 8 or 9, and you give a little bit more, and a little bit, and it's like you get sucked in to a system, and at some point, you feel like, I don't have another choice. Like, that's the only choice I got. And so they have to hear, so what? And it goes back to, why are we playing sports anyways?
Yeah,
and to me, that's what's lost. We play to have fun. Like, we play to relax.
Well, I've always said that our technology has moved faster than our brain's ability to comprehend it all, and that's why we have people that just don't know social norms when they get on some of the social media. But our sports are almost like that, too. And again, I'm a dinosaur. When I was playing sports, I played I think I played 5 sports throughout the year. And when I got into high school, I was on 4 different teams. And I actually played in college. I played York College. I played York, for those of you that know where York College is set up. And I played baseball and I played soccer there. I got scholarships. You can't do that now. I mean, and it's sort of crept up on us as parents, because I have 4 kids that I've raised, and during that time it was happening too, even though they're older now. I can only imagine what's happening. I have grandkids now, and they're going through almost... These kids are still in grade school, and they're almost being asked to specialize.
Absolutely.
Choose one.
Absolutely. Yeah. But real quick, before I ask you, I want you to take this little tidbit with you. So I'm writing a book about this, because I think it's a really dynamic issue that we have to wrestle with. And there's a lot of people that are doing a lot of good stuff. They're just not necessarily doing it in the name of Christ or anything. If you want to go back and either deal with this with your family or your church, there's a guy named John O'Sullivan, and he has a TED Talk. And he began this kind of activist group called Changing the Game. You follow him on Facebook and watch his TED Talk and go to his website, and they do things all over the country. And he's starting to begin a movement. And what's happening is local recreation leagues are hiring, like parks and rec departments, or that's where I heard them in Columbus, are bringing them to come in and helping them wrestle with this thing. Because another thing we haven't really had a chance to talk about is the other thing that's happening is my son plays travel baseball, costs $750, which makes you feel dirty. The local rec league is about $125, $150. Hey, man, unless you're pretty affluent, you can't afford to pay those. But so many kids are pulling out of the local rec league that the kids that really would benefit from the cheaper pay, there's nothing to do. I read an article about a parks and rec department in Louisiana who stopped offering their local rec league and started leasing the park out to all the other leagues. Like, that might be where we're headed, which is churches who kind of have the heritage of starting these things for everyone should kind of unsettle us. So you guys had something.
The other thing, the myth that I hear all the time, and it may be kind of unique to the area that I'm in, but it's not just kids believe they're going to be professional athletes, they also, their parents are telling them, this is your ticket to college. This is your, so 12-year-olds are specializing in a sport because this is what they have to do to get a scholarship to college.
That's
because
their parents are paying $750 instead of investing in college.
Exactly.
I didn't mention.
And the parents are justifying the expense and the time and everything because of college.
Yeah. I'm a high school football official in Ohio, which gives me an interesting perspective. I was doing a freshman game one night, and it was the last game of the season, and one of the dads was doing the poles along the fence, and he was talking to us before, and he said, oh, my son's been hurt all year, but he's going to be able to play tonight, but we have a lot more money invested in his basketball future than we do his football future, so we're cool that he's ready. He's a freshman in high school. Are you kidding me? And this is one of the things I do with kids. And you're right. It's so many parents that we're trying to bring back to earth. But like club volleyball is really big around us. And so when the Olympics were going on, I flipped on Olympic volleyball. And I looked at the lineups, right? Girls volleyball, 6'3", 6'4", 6'3", 6'6", 6'4", 6'2". I'm like, I don't care how long you play club volleyball. If your mom isn't 6 feet tall, just forget about it. And that's what so many people who are writing in this literature, they say, I mean, you watch a college game of almost anything, it's amazing how many of their parents were big-time athletes. It's amazing. And yet we think, yeah, that's our ticket. Like, if we can just... And so imagine if you're an impoverished family, especially an inner-city's family, that could be our ticket. All of a sudden, we've sold out. And I thought I had this in the slide. I'll leave you with this, because I think this is... If I have a message to try to bring into churches, it's this. When Jesus was dealing with Pharisees on the Sabbath, he said, look, the Sabbath was made for man. Not meant for the Sabbath. Sports is the same thing. Like, sports are made for us to enjoy, to love. It should be enjoyable. And I'm tired of talking to parents who just look like they went through a war last weekend. Like, this is supposed to be fun. Your kids are only going to be this age for like 3 more years. Like, this should be life-giving and fun. And it's busy, but, you know, Dion?
I know we're over time. Just talk about dodgeball.
Okay. So this is one of my beliefs. I've been in youth ministry for like 15 years, and lots of stuff has changed. But one thing that's not changed is dodgeball has always been everybody's favorite thing.
It's the greatest equalizer right there.
It's because everybody loves, they just get to play. Like, there's no leagues, there's no tournaments, you win, and then you blow the whistle, and you go back and you start over again.
There's tears with the biggest of them and the smallest.
Yeah, man, the kids, I used to whip them. Now I'm too old, and they just crush me, and they love it. But I think they just want to play. Like, our kids are so hungry. And this is one of the reasons I think youth ministry has a real opportunity through, you know, goofy youth ministry games. There's a reason why kids like to do that.
Such a good point.
They come in like, we got to play. Like, we got to play.
I think the dodgeball was the biggest thing at the Pro Bowl for the football this year.
Does anybody know what Gaga Ball is?
Yeah.
Okay, same thing with Gaga Ball. We have that at our camp. You know, it's a great equalizer. And you play, somebody wins, yay! And then you play over again. Right? Go ahead.
Football is a money-making sport. And that's why there's so much emphasis. You go to a football game, you go to a high school game. Sometimes you'll see both stadiums full. In fact, football pays for all the sports. It pays it. Pays a bill for the whole thing.
Yeah, football and basketball, you know, that's why I said there's so many different discussions to take place. Yeah. We haven't even talked about money and how that impacts so many things, you know.
Well, the highest paid state employee in Oregon is a football coach.
Yeah, like almost every state in the union.
Governor.
Yeah. Hey, guys, thanks for hanging out. This was fun, man. Appreciate it. Hopefully we'll talk some more about this. Yeah.